And good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are now tuned into the Pastor Spot, a radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. My name is Terry Tackett, and now it is my pleasure to turn it over to the host of the show, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Hello, Pastor.
Hey, Terry. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I am doing great. Hey, this is Pastor Steve Whitaker. I want to welcome you tonight. This is Wednesday night, the 2nd of June, I think. Are we the 2nd?
Hey, yeah.
There we go.
July. You said June.
I did say June, didn't I? This is the 2nd of July, and I do have the time right. We are almost 5:20 p.m. We got that? And there we go. Anyway, it's great to be here. Coming up on the 4th of July, sneaking right around the corner, I'll be spending a great deal of the day in Prospect Park. We have a wonderful celebration over there during the day. Oh, my word, there's bunches of bounce houses and games and just everything you can imagine. There's a huge drawing.
I'm coming for dinner that night down there.
Oh, yeah, the chicken's unreal. The fire department works every year very hard cooking chicken on the grill, and they serve those there. And the Lions Club usually does the serving, and the fire department does the cooking. But, you know, we'll all be taking turns over there, working different times and booths and places. And it's just a great time. There's a lot that really goes on for kids and for adults. Usually there's a couple Amish families that bring baked goods to sell, and I think they have bingo and just a whole bunch of stuff going on over there. There's the huge raffle that we have every year where you buy tickets, and you know, there's people donate prizes from all over the place. From you can't imagine the amount of prizes that come in, and some are really, really good prizes. But you know, it's just a busy time, and then we have the fireworks, and their fireworks are always so exceptional. You know, Mike's Roofing donates a lot towards those fireworks every year, and I do want to thank him on the air for that.
He's been a partner on that for a long time. My dad used to live down there. Yeah.
Yes, Mike has been, Marty Martin Bernard's been. They've been a long time supporter of that, and just a great deal there. Of course, the fire department and then the Lions Club come together and do all that. It's just a great time. A really good family time.
Yeah.
And it's safe and.
That's what I love more than anything going down there. That's what I like seeing. Everywhere you look, families together. You know, they had the pony rides, I think, and stuff.
They saw the pony rides. Yeah. And they've got the little train the guy pulls around kids get in. You buy tickets for that stuff. But it's not real expensive. It really isn't. And just a really, really good time. And then they have the pavilion that has music and different things going on all the time. And you can sit out there and just relax and just really, really enjoy your day. Anyway, come over to the 4th, about 11 o'clock in the morning when things start kicking off, 11:30, and come over to the park at Prospect and enjoy yourself. We've been busy at the church, too, with the summer lunch program, and we're gearing up for our big community outreach work week on the 14th, and Bible school is going to start, you know, on the 7th, and we have just a lot going on. So also, we have our free meal this Sunday night, and this coming Sunday night. So if you want your kids to go to Bible school and want to register ahead of time, you can come to the church at 209 East Water Street tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock, and you can register your kids for Bible school. So a lot of exciting stuff going on. Looks like next week I'm going to be kind of busy because I always work one of the classes, one of the things in Bible school. And it's just a lot of fun. It's good working with the kids. I truly love the kids. They're just great. And but anyway, we're looking forward to that, having a good time with that. And I want to encourage the parents out there too. Also, please let your kids come to Bible school. It'll be in the evening for a couple hours. And, you know, it's just, it's a time for if you need some time to relax and go to the grocery, whatever you want to do laundry, you know, good time for the kids to come there and learn about Jesus. So important. And have a good time, and they have a snack time and learn songs. Just a wonderful time. And good, responsible people to take care of. And you don't have to worry about their safety while they're there. And just, you know, what a blessing that is. It truly, truly is. So anyway, it's great to be here tonight, Terry. We had last week Lulu Romano, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Lulu is a, I think most of you remember her out there. She was on Hee Haw for a long time, and she was oh so funny.
Uh-huh.
And of course, we know that she's had some struggles in life, and she came through those, and she's been in ministry for quite some time now.
Yep.
And she has a book out, and it is called
This is my story, this is my song.
This is my story, this is my song. And those of you that may realize from hearing that, that is actually from the chorus of an old hymn. This is my story, this is my song, praising my Savior all the way, all the day long. And that's where that comes from. Yes, and she praises God for everything that he's done in her life and bringing her back around. What a wonderful, wonderful lady. And, you know, we hear so many stories of tragedy stories of people that just spiral downhill. Well, this is a story, you know, of a lady that started to spiral downhill, but yet God got a hold of her, and she spiraled back uphill. And what a blessing that is. Neat to have her here last week. I couldn't come in for the day. Man, I really wanted to come in for
her testimony. It was great.
Great, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I wanted to come in last Friday, and it just didn't materialize. My schedule is, sometimes I have to be honest, my schedule is not my own.
Oh, yeah.
And I may plan one thing, but circumstances dictate something completely different.
I
really do, and it's okay as long as I get pulled in positive directions and not sidetracked.
Right,
big difference, isn't there?
Right. One thing nice about, of course, you couldn't miss her. She had that fire engine red hair, though.
But what
a wonderful lady. I can't say enough nice things about her. Just a great.
We
had her here for 6 hours, and she just
kept right on going. Well, you know, she's
drank her sweet tea and just
drank her sweet tea, and away she went.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, the thing is, she was a performer, an actress.
Yeah.
And they usually have some stamina behind a mic or a camera.
Yeah.
And
she was absolutely, I mean, just did anything you want. Just, you know, great, great lady.
You know, what's really cool about that is that so many people, when they get to be, they think they get to be like 50 and it's all downhill from there. And people like her show us that, no, it's not.
Right.
You know, we can keep right on going and doing what
she
we...
She said the only health issue she had, of course, you know, she's 74, I think, mm-hmm. her knees. She said it feels like they're going, you know.
Well, I mean, she was a big lady for a long time. I mean, knees do go.
Yeah.
And I know I carry more weight than I should, and my knees will tell me about it when I'm going up steps, not down steps.
But like I say, she sat there. She was a trooper, man. I mean, we put her through 6 hours of...
You know, man, think of the cool people she got to work with.
Oh, her just some of her stories. I mean, her book, I wish I'd have brought it. I'll let you... Oh, some of the pictures. You wouldn't have believed the people that she was...
You know what I wanted to ask her about, if I would have been here, was String Bean and his wife. Do you remember them?
My dad mentioned him last night. I never knew a guy, but he said,
Yeah, he played banjo, and he was just skinny as a rail, and I forget how tall he was, but super, super tall. Obviously, the name String Bean.
Yeah.
But, you know, he and his wife, a lot of the people that were on that show, Hee Haw, from years ago,
mm-hmm.
Were really genuine, real people.
Yeah.
What I mean, we're all real, but you know what I mean? They were, a lot of them didn't try to live differently than they'd always lived.
Absolutely.
And String Bean and his wife being a prime example. And even though they had money coming in from the show, obviously were doing well, they lived in this tiny little house out in the middle of nowhere that was, honestly, it looked like what you and I would call a shack. But it was where they were comfortable. But anyway, one night someone broke in and killed both of them. And they never solved it. They thought that there was a kind of a shady younger guy that had been doing some break-ins down the road. They thought maybe he had did it, but no one ever really.
My dad said he took a small amount of money, didn't get a lot of money.
Just a small amount of money, and killed him. But what a very sad thing. Very kind people, but there were a lot of interesting people on that show.
Yeah.
Roy Clark, Buck Owens, Louise Mandrell, Barbara Mandrell. What were the two brothers that were on
there? The Hager brothers.
The Hager brothers were on there. Barbie Benton was on there. Remember Barbie Benton? Just so many different people. And I can't remember the little blonde lady's name that was always on
there.
Kathy Lee Baker.
She was the one that always, you know, kind of took them in and out of, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. But, you know, what a neat...
Beauregard, the dog.
I forgot about that. But, you know, honestly, even though it was set in kind of a slapstick, backcountry way...
Uh-huh.
It was good, clean entertainment.
Well, it was funny. We asked her who her favorite was, one of her favorites.
Who was it?
Of course, this will be no surprise to you, but Grandpa Jones.
You know, I'll bet.
Lamar, she says, real name is Lamar Jones. Said he was the most quiet guy. She said, like when they weren't you know, in when he was in character, he was always fiddling with the banjo, learning different chords. And
how neat.
Yeah.
Talent.
Yes.
There's a lot of talent on the
from top to bottom.
For the slapstick silliness that it was, from top to bottom, there was real talent.
She was rattling off some of these people. That, I mean, just Gordy Tapp and, you know, just all these other guys. excuse me, Archie Campbell. And
I forgot about Archie.
George Lindsay, who played Goober.
George Lindsay. I forgot him.
I know I'm Junior Samples. I mean, I know I'm missing a lot, but
no, there were just so many.
That was the main ones, you know, and I think Roy Acuff, she said, was a long time with them or whatever, and
just so many different people.
Yeah.
You know, it's neat. Her story's neat. And,
I so enjoyed listening to it. You know, I mean everything from even at her lowest point, she never gave up hope.
No, and I think that, you know, God ended up instilling that hope in her and giving her and her understanding that by giving her life to Christ and leaning on him every day, she could come up from those depths of despair. And it's you know, I'll tell you, Terry, when you do that, when you live that way, you may not feel like you're getting ahead rapidly or anything's changing a lot. But years down the road, when you look back, you go, wow, how did I get from that low point to where I am now? Unlike someone says, you know, how did I get from my high point down to where I am now? You know, a lot of people start spiraling downhill and their lives get to the point where they just fade away. And there's, you know, you read stories about what happens to people that are popular, to stars and different things, and what they fall into. It's really sad to hear that stuff. And I don't know about you, but I'm kind of done with sad for a while.
Along that line, real quick, I just want to say she was a total breath of fresh air. I mean, as opposed to what's going on in the world today, she was tremendous. I mean, I would much rather hear those kind of stories all day long than.
I would too.
I call that a redemption story.
I know Scott and I have talked about, you know, it'd be nice if we had a news channel that everything on it was good news.
Yeah.
All good news. Yeah. And if some important fact would come on, fine. But everything else, there are so many positive stories out there. You know, just in activities, we hear so many activities going on that aren't good, but I know that out there's so many good things that our churches and our communities are doing and our different groups are doing. Young people, you know, just very, very positive things. Like this, to give you an example, this week at the fair, these kids work with our 4-H projects and they practically live with them for 6 months or longer, depending on the project, and whether it's sewing or baking or animals, livestock, whatever it is, they pour their hearts into it, and it shows. And I don't think we see nearly enough of that or hear nearly enough about that stuff. I shared a story the other day that I thought was just remarkable. And, you know, even though we're in the city of Marion here at the station, this is a rural area. I mean, Marion's kind of plopped right in the middle of rural America. And as is Delaware, and sure, there's a lot of city to it, but you go outside the city a couple miles and you're in farm country. But a good story about rural America, I think that many times rural America gets a bad shot, and it really does. People like to, it always seems to me that when reporters come to town to report on something in a rural town, be it Prospect or Green Camp or any smaller town, and this is nationwide, I see it, they try to find the person that is toothless and can't talk to interview. You ever notice that? And it's kind of like there's almost this narrative they want to put forward that people that live in rural areas are somehow uneducated and not real bright. And that's too bad, because we have some of the best people in the world. And in a story I want to share about that, I had read this off of the social media, and I forget the name of the county in Ohio. It's not real important, I guess. But anyway, a young lady, you know, had taken a hog to the fair, and it was overweight. And if you've ever shown them 4-H, you know you can't show and sell an overweight animal. It has to go directly to slaughter, and you get market price for it. It doesn't go through the auction ring like the other kids. They get elevated prices for as the auction goes on, and people come to those auctions at the county fairs. And anyway, this young lady had gone in, and she had asked permission to do this, and she told the auctioneers, look, my animal's already gone. They took it on the truck. And it was the auction was taking place for the kids that were selling it because theirs were within that proper weight range. And she said, I really wanted to sell mine because my cousin just had, it was either an aunt or a cousin, had four little kids and was just diagnosed with stomach cancer. And she said, I wanted the proceeds to go to that. So this was, the auctioneer said, well, I'll tell you what, we'll take the picture of your pig. And we're going to hold it. You can hold it up in the ring, and we're going to sell it again. And basically, they'd be selling the picture. And they had two. The auctioneer stopped, and they told everyone, "In a couple minutes here, we're going to sell a couple more hogs. And in a couple minutes, this is what we're going to do and why." And so they had two more hogs they sold. In the meantime, different buyers got together and talked. And when they were done bidding, he sold that hog for $27 a pound. Now, if it went overweight, that meant it was about 300 pounds. Okay, and then when they were done, I think Kroger bought it, I'm not sure. But whoever bought it, they gave it back to be sold again. The picture back to be sold again. And the second time it brought $20. The bottom line is this girl was able to donate $13,000 to this lady with cancer. But understand something, all that took place with no warning within a 5-minute period of time. And that's what I see in rural America. That's what I see, the care and the love that people have for each other. And people sometimes complain in a small town that everybody knows their business. And you know what, I have to be honest with this, that is an accurate statement. They do. But even though they may know everyone's business, if you're in trouble, they're going to be the first ones there to take care of you and help you. And the churches are the same way. What I love about pastoring in a rural community is that if there's someone in town that's ill, they may attend another church, but the pastor has no problem with me going to the hospital and seeing them, going to their home. Stepping in if they can't be there, maybe ask me, Steve, could you go to the hospital? I can't make it today or this week or whatever. Could you go see this person? You don't see that in large communities. You don't see people that I know within our town. We have a ministerial fund, and if someone locally in town has a real need, they can come to the ministerial association, and we'll look at it. And if it's a real need, you know, we'll help them with it. Whatever that need is, sometimes it's utilities. It's been a lot of things. I think we've even helped people with taxes before. But the point is, that's what they're there for. And people in the community throughout the year, they give to that. And it's a wonderful thing. It's a really wonderful thing about a rural community that you see that. And people don't realize that stuff even goes on anymore. And while at the same time, we are not a big community, we have accountants, doctors, lawyers in our community. And most people, you know, they don't think of that when you go to a rural area. And honestly, farming has gotten to the point today, if you are not a good business manager and a smart cookie, you aren't going to be farming. So to think that we're just a bunch of podunk silly people is very much a misnomer. And rural America, we need to save it. That's one of my concerns about people that want to go to a popular vote versus an electoral college. You know, the minute we go to a popular vote, rural America loses its voice completely. It's gone. Because of the Electoral College and the way that it's set up, everyone in America has an equal voice. But if you go to a popular vote, everything that we vote on is going to be decided by the major population centers. And the rural America won't have a voice anymore. And we do. That's one thing that our founding fathers were very smart when they set that up, and that's why they did it. They wanted to make sure that no particular population group controlled the country, that it was clear across the country and understood that way. And actually, it's not usually that far off anyway. Sometimes the popular vote is a little bit more one way, and maybe the person didn't get quite the popular vote, got the Electoral College vote. But it's never such a wide disparaging amount that is mind-boggling. Like, no one's going to get 90% of the popular vote and win for the presidency. It's just not going to happen. But, you know, we have to be in a situation where we are all represented equally. And we have a say-so in what goes on. Because, quite frankly, you know, the truth is, I think, Terry, that no one in the major cities, they do not understand rural America at all. They don't understand anything whatsoever. I mean, there's those that do. I'm not saying there's not. But for the most part, people have no clue the difference between a bull, a cow, a chicken. I mean, they don't. They go to the grocery store. They don't know what it takes to get that there. Everybody's saying, you know, man, the farmers are in trouble. The grain farmers are in trouble. You know, in a sense they are, but in a sense they're not. And let me explain that real quickly. They may end up, in a lot of cases, with half the yield this year of corn they normally would have had. But if corn, because of the low yield, is double the cost when they sell it, they've actually made more than they would have if they had a bumper crop. You see the difference? Whereas at the same time, though, here's something we don't see. If you're a dairy farmer or someone of that nature, and the grain prices go sky high, you got to buy that feed. It's costing you a fortune to feed your animal. You're the one losing your shirt. You see what I mean? And at the same time, people don't understand food prices are going to go through the roof. You know, because, okay, if it takes me more money to feed a pig, a chicken, or a cow, you know, what about soybeans? People say, oh, I don't eat meat. Really? Well, guess what? Soybeans? Soybeans go up. Half of what you eat has soy in it. And other wheat, you know, wheat, barley, everything comes from farm products. You take the farms away, everybody starves. I mean, guys, we don't eat plastic. We don't eat technology. Well, you know, we don't. Yeah. And we eat things that are made. They may end up in some plant being put together and mixed together and made into A, B, or C, but they all start in a field somewhere. You know, everything does. Everything that we eat starts in a field somewhere, whether it's a fruit, a vegetable, whatever it is. Any type of staple does.
Frozen broccoli, yeah.
It doesn't matter. It all starts in a field somewhere, and people need to understand that. And we really have such a disconnection. And we didn't used to have the disconnection so much because, you know, years ago, about half the people did farm and were on farms. And over the years, it's changed. And as the farms grew larger, less people farmed and they moved the city for a more stable job, a more stable manufacturing job, or whatever it may be. And the farm communities got smaller in number and, you know, those things change, so you don't have as many people understanding. When's the last time we had a real farmer in the White House? And don't say Jimmy Carter. I mean, their family peanut farm, but he was not a farmer. But, you know, my point is that he personally was not, I guess, is what I'm saying. But, no, we haven't. I mean, we have lawyers in the White House, and we have businessmen in the White House, and we have... You know, but we have military people. We certainly don't have people that represent rural America too much. They're typically in the White House or in politics. So I think that we need to understand them more. I think that when it comes to basic family values, and let me explain what I mean by family values. By family values, I mean people that want to act and conduct themselves the way a family did for thousands of years, all the way up until a couple decades ago. And that was where family interacted with each other. They understood each other. They cared about each other. They took care of each other. They ate together. They lived together. And those kind of things. And today, we have gotten to the point where, man, our families are so split up and divided and going in different directions, and some family never sees the other part of the family, and it's really gotten quite sad. We move all over the country. Nobody stays home anymore and stays around their family, around mom and dad or anyone. What's really cool about rural America is you know, that's not necessarily true there. A lot of people still are do leave. But I look at my family and my children. The farthest child I have from me is 15 minutes because they live in Marysville. And I have four kids, 14 grandchildren. I have four, a daughter-in-law and three son-in-laws. And we're all right there. It's because we go to church together. Well, most of us do. One daughter in Marysville doesn't any longer. She goes to church in Marysville. But we all go to church together. We get together on holidays. Matter of fact, 4th of July is a big one. They'll all be over eating hot dogs and brats and watching fireworks together. And, you know, we do those things. We're there for each other. Somebody's sick, somebody's there. I love it. I've got my daughter-in-law, Holly, is a nurse, an RN. And it's really great because if somebody has a problem, they're not sure, should I go to the ER, should I this or that? You know, Holly's always quick to be able to what's going on with you? Or, you know, I've got to give my kids a shot and I want to do it, or I have to. Holly, can you come and do it? Or whatever the case may be. And she's just great that way. But you know, we're close. We're there for each other. Same deal with mechanical problems on a vehicle. You know, my son's a great mechanic and amazing mechanic. And somebody has a problem, they call Uncle Matt or they call Brother Matt or you know what I mean? And it's just neat stuff. My wife is the seamstress in the family. And so she gets everybody's clothes to him. And, you know, it's just that it's pretty cool that way. John, of course, is the farmer in the family now, the only one left farming. I'm done with livestock, but John and Kelly do the farming, and quite frankly, I think that all of us end up a lot of times. Matt, I raise steers at Matt's house, and sometimes a hog, but Matt raises livestock, and you know, between all of us, you know, Holly and Corey raise chickens, so we got eggs. But my point is this. It produces and encourages family values to be in a rural community and to care about a rural community. And I think that if we adopted, even in the suburbs, we'll call them the burbs, if we adopted back even in the burbs some of those ideas, those thought processes, I think it would be much better for everyone. I did notice over by Lewis Center, they built a community over there where they're putting neighborhood stores and shops and doctors right in the center of it. And I guess this is a new thing they're trying to do now, is come back where they build these large communities and they put everything they need in the middle of it so they can basically walk or ride their bike to anything they need. Aha, what an odd concept, right? That would be America 50 years ago. All of these small towns around here used to be thriving towns. It's amazing. You know, Prospect is not a big town. And I think we've got left. We've got a small carry out. We've got a Dollar General. We got a bank. We have a barber. An ice cream place. A feed mill. A post office. City Hall. I'm going to miss some things. A pizza place. Gas station. Pharmacy. Those aren't a lot of things, but when I pull out the old advertisement books from early, like in the 40s, 50s, oh my word, man, there were car dealerships and implement dealerships and jewelers and clothing stores and shoe stores and it's like butcher shops, and it's like, you got to be kidding me, where were all of these things? But you know, it used to be that way when people weren't so mobile and didn't travel everywhere, and they did all their shopping right at home. And they walk to stores and they walk to schools. And I really think that we need to get back to so much more of that in this country. Which brings me up to something I don't really want to talk about, but I think it's important that we do talk about it, is that I want parents out there and grandparents and children to be so aware of the human trafficking problem today. We had a fellow come to our 4-H meeting the other day and speak to the kids, and his job is to go around and talk to people about, to put it in a nutshell, stranger danger, okay? And he talks about, you know, what makes you a target, what to look out for, what you know. One thing interesting that he said to the kids was, he said, it's wonderful to be a pretty girl, But if you're a pretty girl, you're at the top of the target list. And how sad that is. But we're starting to see problems we didn't used to see in America. They're not so isolated anymore. I think that if you look at, if you're active on social media, you'll see every day different pictures pop up of young people disappearing. And nobody knows where they're at. Now, some of them are just runaways. Some of them run away with a boyfriend, or they get mad and don't come. But a lot of them don't. You know, the trafficking issue and the sex trade and the human trafficking, even for labor, is getting unbelievable. A fellow was asking me today, he said, you know, for what they call these guys coyotes that bring people to the border. And it's real interesting. James Dobson was just down at the border. He was seeing what's really going on down there. And he said, it's funny, the thing that's interesting in talking to ICE agents and different people working down there, only 10% of these people are Mexican, roughly, that come in. They're from everywhere. I mean, every ethnic group you can imagine are coming across our border. And here's what's really odd, Terry. The average cost of someone getting here, they call them coyotes, that'll get them there and across and bring them, is $3,500. And now you're talking about people that an annual income is probably half that. Where's that come from? Well, I'll tell you where a lot of it's coming from, is it's not being collected up front. What they're doing is they're charging people in the states that are paying them for the slave labor. Isn't that sad? They're indentured servants. You know, when did we see that before? We saw that back in the 1600s and 1700s with especially the white Irish that came over as slaves. I mean, we always talk about a horrible, horrible thing African-American slavery was. But going on at the same time, something that doesn't get talked about are the shiploads of Irish Americans that came over here and were sold, and were either sold ahead of time or sold once they got here, and they had to work as what was called an indentured servant. But sometimes that servitude was never over, and we're seeing a lot of that with what's coming over the border. And it's just not a safe thing anymore. I would encourage you, if you're out there and you want to send your kids to the store, or ladies, you want to go to the store, go in the daylight hours. Don't go by yourself late at night. I'm continually seeing reports of trucks pulling up, trying to grab kids. You hear it constantly. Strange people parked out somewhere that nobody really knows why, and then they speed off. And half the time in their vans. I mean, what are cargo vans doing running around like that? I can understand back in the 70s, right? You know, we all used to have those hopped-up cargo vans with the Craigers on them and wide tires and custom paint jobs and little moon windows in the back. But, you know, we don't drive those anymore. So if you see a van just cruising around slowly, something's probably up to no good half the time. You know, parking a lot late at night. But all I'm doing is encouraging parents, please be careful. Send your kids in pairs or twos or threes somewhere. Don't send your little girls out alone places. It just isn't a good idea, because to me, the greatest fear is not knowing what happens to a child once they're gone. And, you know, Adam Walsh was the little boy that was taken that John Walsh has done all these spinoff series from. And to this day, he said it just rips him up to when he even thinks about his child and what happened. And, you know, it's a real world out there. Those things happen. Find safe places for your kids to go. It's great for your kids to go to the pool, but either one of two things, either send them in a group. Tell them that, understand, make them understand that you do not talk to strangers. You know, no one picks you up at school unless you know for a fact who it is, and you know them, and the school knows them. You know, all those kind of things that do go on. But we got to keep these kids safe, man. And that's just all there is to it. We got to do it.
And especially during this break from school right now, especially. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Mom and dad's working. You know, the kids are sometimes home by themselves. And
Terry, I'll tell you, I see these little girls in string bikinis walking all the way across town to go to the pool by themselves. And I'm thinking, for crying out loud, Mom and Dad, have you lost your mind? All it takes is somebody to pull up and someone to jump out and throw them, and they're gone. They're gone. And same thing with any little kids. They're gone. I grew up in this town. You may have grown up in this town, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, but that's not, 2019.
Right.
It's not the same town. And people do come from out of town. People from your own town aren't going to be doing this stuff anyway. I mean, it's possible, but most people are going to be from somewhere else that are going to see that your town's an easy target, or they're going to get patterns down. We already know that Route 23 is one of the biggest sex trade corridors in the country, and it's constantly being hit. One reason for 23 is 270 or 71 would be, but the Highway Patrol is really keen on pulling people over and watching for the types of vehicles and things that go on. But you can get off on 23 or hit these side roads and get places where you're probably never going to be bothered. And it's amazing how many people are pulled over on 23 and found to either be trafficking drugs or people. And you just hate to see that ever happen. And there's so many good places you can take your kids. Bring them to church, folks. Come on. We have a great Sunday school program and things they can do during the week. It's just a wonderful thing to get plugged in your community, into your church. If you don't know the people and you wonder about them, come yourself. Come yourself and stay, even with Bible school. If you're a mom or your dad, and stay for Bible school. Watch what goes on, Be there with them. But, it's such a, I think we're missing great opportunities today for some simplicity in our lives, for some family values, for some really, really important things. And I hope that people the other day did listen to Lulu Roman and her story, because that was a story of redemption. It truly was. And that redemption is available to anyone that just wants to take it and turn to God and say, God, change me, use me. And understand that wonderful free gift that Christ gave us in covering all that world of sin that we carry on our back. We don't have to live with guilt. And I'm sure that Lula doesn't live with one bit of guilt, because she gave it away. She didn't have to live with what she did back then. But what she can do is promote what she's doing today, which is fantastic stuff. And we need to see more people doing that. And I think that we need to have more people intervening when we see someone having a problem.
Yes.
Intervene and say, "Well, you're going down a path you shouldn't go.
Right.
Come on, you're hanging around kids you shouldn't hang around.
And don't be afraid to say something.
Don't be afraid to go to somebody's mom and dad and say, hey, you know what? I just want to let you know your kid's starting to hang around this kid, and this kid over here is doing A, B, or C, and I know about it. And take the risk on mom or dad saying it's none of your business. So what? You might save a kid in the process. And we really have to look out for each other's kids and not just say, oh, I see so-and-so's kids hanging around with so-and-so now. Won't be long till they're snorting, or shooting up or whatever. No, you don't do that. You intervene. And you care about people. And, a lot of people intervened for me when I was raising kids and came to me, when I needed a told about something.
Well, in life, I think no matter as old as you get, you still need that.
Oh, absolutely. I have accountability partners.
I still need it.
I've got guys in the church that will pull me aside and tell me, hey, I've been thinking about this lately, or I've noticed this, or I've noticed that, or those kind of things. And I certainly have daughters that'll square me up in a heartbeat. My son, not so much. Sometimes. But, boy, my daughters will let me have it when I'm out of line. And in a respectful way. Don't get me wrong.
Right, right, right.
But it's great to have that accountability.
Yeah.
And, if all else fails, my wife's certainly right there to keep me straight. I got a whole host of them keeping me on the straight and narrow.
I'm with you, man. I got two sisters myself. And, and they're real stickler about things, and if you don't do some of those things, for example, and I'm terrible about this, is for a long time I didn't know the proper fork.
Proper fork?
Yeah. Oh my. So I got fork 101.
Fork 101. My daughter told me today, she said, Dad, she said, either go get your hair cut or do something with it, because every time you're out working and I see you, your hair's sticking straight up in the air. And I said, okay.
Yeah.
My
sister can always say, first thing she'll see, where'd you get that shirt? Why is it got... Did you bring another one?
Dad, that shirt's too tight on you.
I get that. Yeah.
You look horrible in that shirt. Take it off.
Yeah. Do you have another one? That's what she'll... Do you have another one? Well, no, I have to go home. Go get one.
Go get one because you really look bad. Yeah. Uh-huh. I don't believe you're wearing those socks with that. Oh, yeah, I get it all the time.
Yeah. Or, like I say, because half the time, in the morning I'm getting dressed. You don't know what a blue sock is from a black sock. Four in the morning, you don't care. You just...
Yeah, my daughter's. My daughter at my birthday was a couple weeks ago, and I knew before I ever opened a present what my daughter Kelly was going to give me, and sure enough, it was a nice pair of khaki shorts, and because she was getting on me about a month earlier about wearing gym shorts, and she said, "Dad, you got to wear nicer stuff than you're wearing," and I have khaki shorts,
right?
But she wanted to make sure I had more because she got to watch me, and it's really funny being a pastor on Sunday morning. I get critiqued also. Why did you say that? Dad, would you realize that when you were saying blah, 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 you kept staring at this one person? And no, I didn't realize that. I don't stare at people intentionally. Well, you kept doing it. And you probably made them feel, I'm like, okay, whatever. I'll start putting on a mask. I can see my face where my eyes are going.
Like, every time they leave my dad's house, me and him are sitting there, and we're like, because they have this list from head to toe. Same thing with you, Dad. That shirt, really? Or what?
Yeah, that would be my daughter's exact word. Dad, come on, really?
Yeah, because my dad's a big NASCAR. Sometimes he'll just wear NASCAR. Dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family that you're wearing a NASCAR, or...
But see, I'm the first one. I'm the first one to tease the heck out of my kids about what I'll wear. I think I told you the story before that... I took a old motorcycle helmet and glued two steer horns on it so that I could ride around town with this helmet on and freak my daughter out because you talk about embarrassing someone to death. But I didn't do it. I made it, but it was just a threat. But sometimes you got to call their bluff, right?
Yeah.
Hey, folks, it's been a nice night. Good evening here with Harry. I want to invite you to Community Christian Fellowship. We're at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Our service times are at 9:30 and 10:30. 9:30 is Bible study hour, and 10:30 is worship time. We have on Sunday 6:30 Bible study on Wednesday, and I'd love to have you come. Come visit us, 209 East Water Street, or give us a call, 740-494-222. God bless you guys. Have a wonderful week, and I'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
This is WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.